It's surprising and sometimes even distressing that people have sometimes some misperceptions about the foundation. Our absolute goal in all the education we work is that every kid, no matter where their zip code, has an equal chance at a great education. And so our focus on teachers, our focus on students, on families, on people getting what they need, almost inevitably leads to thinking about things like Common Core, because if you have that equity agenda, having a common standard that everyone can teach to and think about is part of that equity agenda.
Does the foundation have a position on certain initiatives that kind of help with that equity piece? In other words, some people are strong proponents of school choice. You know, they think that makes a real difference. Are there certain policies or methods that the foundation supports to promote more equity?
I would say that rather than focusing on certain positions or policies, as a foundation, we're very eager to have data and facts. And so it's not uncommon. We work with partners. We work in all 50 states. And so it's not uncommon that we'd like, if there's something that's a belief, we'd love to turn a belief into something tested. And so we often work with partners to ask questions about best practices or things like that. But there are some things we believe in. I'll give you an example. FAFSA is an application procedure where people who are wanting to go to college can apply for financial aid. We knew from data and facts and working with partners that the process of filling out forms and families who sometimes are in the most difficult circumstances, working with their kids to fill out those forms and apply for that was too difficult and too long. So as a tactic, we worked with partners to simplify FAFSA, to shorten the time and make it easier. Now that's a really good example of something that no matter where you live in the U.S. and no matter who you are, increases your ability to access a great education.
Who did you work with exactly? Because FAFSA, like you said, it's a federal form. Did you work with like the U.S. Education Department? Who did you work with?
We worked with a number of different partners, but really in the end, it starts with something that I think, again, is underestimated because I read a lot about the criticism of the Gates Foundation. I've only been CEO for 2 years, but I'm still feeling like I'm on a listening tour, even here in Atlanta. And I really do want to emphasize that it starts with listening. You know, I was talking this week to parents, and the more we can talk to parents, the better. Parents of kids in really poor circumstances, and their big worry is, okay, great, my kid, I'm going to get him through high school. I've got a public education system. How are we going to pay for college? So the partnership started with parents and listening, and then goes to at a policy level, working with a number of different partners.
You do give grants and scholarships and things like that to districts. Can you talk about how that supports sort of this idea of equity?
Yes. So even though the foundation is actually the largest foundation in the world, and we are blessed with a lot of resources, even given that, if you look at the U.S. education system, that's massive. And the U.S. is so large that we've learned if we want to make an impact, and that's our goal, we need to pick our spots. So we specifically select where we want to work by where there is a gap, where we see achievement gaps, and where we see partners and collaborators where there's openness and an interest in working together.
I mentioned to you when I came in that we're starting to get all these press releases about the Gates Millennium Scholars. People are obviously very excited when they're awarded that scholarship. Can you talk a little bit about the impact that that's had and the feedback that you've gotten from students?
Yeah. There's a couple of things that I would emphasize about that, and I've had the opportunity to meet some of the Gates Millennium Scholars. The two things that I would say is, like so many other things in life, we think of things at scale in a big picture way. You know, people talk about education reform or improving education. It comes down to a human being. And so one of the best things I hear about is how students think about themselves when they become a Gates Millennium Scholar, how they think about their opportunity, about their ability to make a difference in the world, and they just feel good about themselves, and it starts there. But even more important than that, taking away that worry about money. I mean, I just think it's so important to say, I want all those great brain cells focused on learning and the future and thinking and creating a lot of things that young people are capable of, not worrying. And so the most special thing I hear from students and their families is this took away my worry about the finances and had me focus on what do I want to get done? That's a capacity that all young people have. It increases their ability to use that. So if it's computer science, if it's history, if it's medicine, if it's nursing, it gives them that opportunity to think and to think long-term about not just your undergraduate, but even graduate education.
I know you said you don't necessarily take policy positions, but there are some things that states are doing to try to defray the cost of college because it is becoming prohibitive mm-hmm. for a lot of students. One thing that Georgia is doing is, you know, trying to enroll more kids in AP classes and dual enrollment programs and things like that so that they can have a little bit less stress when it comes to the financial part. Are you seeing that across the country? Are you seeing districts make those efforts? And do you all, again, knowing that you don't necessarily take positions, but do you support efforts like that?
Let me be really clear. On access and affordability, we're all in. So we are all in on access and affordability. What we don't do is we don't specifically take positions on a piece of legislation or someone running for office. Those are the things that we avoid. But we celebrate the efforts like Georgia State and other institutions like Georgia State are making to think about something that's really precious, which is how do you use your time in school? And so using your time in high school, avoiding remedial education, if one needs remedial education, making it as efficient and positive an experience as possible. But the efforts that Georgia State and others have taken to maximize that time, you know, everybody talks about senioritis or other funny terms about, you know, getting a little itchy and wanting to think about your college education. So why not take advantage of that in positive ways? So we're very positive about those efforts. And to the point you're making, it makes most effective the time you spend in college.
Veering off the foundation a little bit, because I know your background is in college level education, higher ed. I'm curious if you saw a similar problem to what has happened in Georgia and some other states where kids did graduate from high school and went to college needing a lot of remediation, then ended up maybe not finishing, you know, because it took so long to get through the remedial courses. Was that also a problem in the California school system? Do you feel like that has been a problem in higher ed in the past?
I was part of the University of California system. I was at UCSF, which actually doesn't even have undergrads. So my specialty was professional and graduate education. But as a chancellor in the University of California system, I could see in real time the impact of high school graduation not being synonymous with college readiness. And anybody who's involved in higher ed could tell you something similar now, especially public higher education, where everyone feels such a commitment to the future and to those families in your state and in your region. So I do think that the comments that people have talked about being college ready, being career ready, are increasingly important questions that families are asking and that each state is asking about their own school system now. Are we preparing students for life?
I'd also love to get your take on something that Georgia State is doing, which is really kind of beefing up their college counseling programs. It's part of what they credit their progress with graduation rates. They've really focused on that and honed in on that. Do you think that's something that other colleges could benefit from, or is it maybe just something that's specific to Georgia State and its demographics?
I am thrilled to see how Georgia State has tapped into counseling as an aspect of their success in closing the achievement gaps. First of all, the terrific success. I mean, they are so to be congratulated. But what I like about how they've thought about this is the specific counseling may be different in your region or your community or a different context, but a universal finding is, particularly for people where the achievement gaps have traditionally been the largest, we may underestimate what those students need to succeed in school. And I'll give you an example. When I was chancellor at UCSF, we had medical students, some of whom were the first in their family to go to college, much less to go to medical school. Folks at home always thought they were a leader in their family. They were a leader in figuring out problem solving. They sometimes brought income home to the family. Well, medical school is not a part-time job, as you know. And those students had very specific needs and demands at home that we needed to be aware of in that medical school. And so Georgia State has tapped into something that really is a universal thing, which is the students for whom achievement gaps may be the greatest may have unique and special challenges that counseling can open up. Different solutions may be possible, but what I love about their counseling stories is they're focused on student success. And so that's just in some ways it's a mindset, and it's a tactic that could be spread around many public institutions and private institutions who are trying to improve their success rates. So we are thrilled when we see that, we champion that, celebrate that, and it's one of the roles of the foundation to look at, are there, we call things in the foundation, things like public goods or commonalities. So in our global health work that people know us for, a vaccine is a global good. You could have a vaccine that you use in Ethiopia, and that same vaccine might be helping people in Rwanda next year. In thinking about student success in college, if Georgia State has a great counseling program, what are the attributes so that we could share that with another state's institution or another institution that may be struggling with achievement gaps, say, wow, look what they did over there. That becomes a public good, something you could aspire to have that's portable and reproducible so that others can succeed.
Is there anything that the foundation is working on right now that you can share with us, whether it's research or whether it's an initiative or a program that's education-based?
Well, let me tell you one of the things that I'm excited about is personalized learning. And I like personalized learning, and you know, like everything in life, you have to worry about jargon because everything's personalized these days. However, I think anyone who hears about personalized learning and thinking about students not being bored, being pushed, but not pushed so much that you feel frustrated, and really thinking about what that student needs to succeed, and personalizing the approach, the manner of learning, the pace of learning for that student, we're really excited about thinking and learning more about personalized learning and working with educators and teachers on what are the tools they need to succeed in that quest to have every student achieve to the top of their capability.
Even though you guys have been focused on K through 12 and post-secondary, you're starting to venture into early ed. How critical do you think the early ed experience is in terms of success in later school years?
We increasingly, and we're data-driven, I mean, we love to have data and experience, and one of the things we do is we work very intensively in Bill and Melinda's hometown, Seattle, where the foundation was started and founded. So our Pacific Northwest work and the work of many others has led us to believe strongly in early education. And so the foundation increasingly is asking ourselves, how can we help people succeed in that quest to go earlier so that students have every chance to succeed K through 12? And the data are pretty clear that early education is making a difference. So you'll see more activity in that area from the foundation.
A lot of the research shows that it helps to narrow the gap, so to speak.
And I think that, again, because this achievement gap is so important for us, early education is particularly important when it comes to closing the achievement gap. So yes, that is, there are many things that can increase student success. The ones we are particularly interested in focusing on are those that can decrease the achievement gap.
Is there anything I haven't covered that you wanted to make sure to add or that you wanted to say about the foundation or Georgia State?
Two things. One is I want people to know how special and important the achievements of Georgia State have been. We often talk about things in education that we're unhappy about or we want to improve as a nation. I feel like we kind of beat ourselves up a lot about education. So it's worth celebrating Georgia State's closing the achievement gap on race, on gender. That's a big deal. So I want to make sure that I give them a big shout out. Good for Georgia State. And the second thing is about the foundation. the foundation is a learning organization. We absolutely don't have all the answers, and we're learning all the time from colleagues in education, from students, from parents, from teachers, from educators who have been in this, and we're in for the long haul. So I think that's one of the things that's special about being at the foundation, is seeing how we're all learning together, what students and families and teachers and programs need. And I'm excited to see what the future brings.
I have to ask you, going into Saturday, are you excited, nervous?
Having spent 5 years as chancellor, I love graduation. You know, there's few things in life that are so filled with just pure happiness. Graduation is pure happiness. So I love commencement. I'm all about good pomp and circumstance. So it's just fun to be involved in commencement because it's a happy time. And yet, I want to make sure I do a great job for all those students and their families. So of course I'll be nervous.